One of Silverlight's biggest advantages is that it uses code. Real code. C#, VB.net, COBOL.net. But this could, paradoxically, be one of its disadvantages. Today, we're joined by author, speaker, and consultant, Ian Griffiths. And he explains how this tremendous benefit can sometimes be a detriment. He also looks 1 year into the future and gives us some predictions about Silverlight. Coming up in the Sparkling Client podcast.
Hello, I'm Eric Mork.
And I'm Monica Mork. Sparkling Client is a podcast about Silverlight and other web client technologies. It's meant for developers and designers who are interested in making the next generation of great-looking web applications. Give us 15 minutes of your time, and we give you the tools to build amazing web clients. This week, we present information from Ian Griffiths. Eric, remind us, who is Ian?
Well, Ian is really an outstanding individual, first of all because he let me interview him at a party, sort of guerrilla style. He's a really nice guy, and like you said, he's a consultant, a developer, a speaker, and an author, and a teacher, if I haven't mentioned that. He also knows WPF, Silverlight, and XAML inside and out, so he's a great person to talk to for the details of Silverlight. If you'd like to read his blog, lots of good information there, and you can find it at shrinkster.com/x7s.
Thanks, Eric. In this show, Ian starts out by talking about the difficulties of rendering video cross-platform. Let's listen to the interview now.
Take video, for example. Mm-hmm. One of the big problems with getting video right on Windows is that the codec stack is not a given. You don't necessarily know what you're going to encounter on an end user's machine in terms of which video formats do they support, are they hardware accelerated or not, because that'll depend on their graphics hardware, it'll depend on which drivers they got installed, and it's a bit of a gamble in some ways. So I've worked on video-based WPF applications, and we always took steps to make sure that what was available was right, because if it wasn't, things were not going to work. Now in Silverlight, they do all the video decode in software, because they don't want to have to depend on the native platform support even being present, and they wanted to work the same way on Windows and OS X. And of course, the video decoding in OS X is all QuickTime based. It's a completely different engine, and they also want to be able to integrate that into the overall rendering. One of the nice things about WPF and Silverlight is integrated rendering. You can have video and vector content and text all mixed together and freely overlapping and transparent with respect to each other, and that's a lot harder to do if you're trying to depend on the underlying OS platform. So WPF does it, but it's quite hard for them to do that. And actually, there are some issues even on XP. The playback of video through WPF on Windows XP is not as good as Windows Media Player is, for example. They have some issues with tearing there, which they can't really fix on XP at all. With OS X, I actually don't know whether that will be an issue, but they've just decided to say, we'll do it all in software to make sure it is consistent across all the platforms. Now, does that mean they could never hardware accelerate? No, but it's a more complex thing to do. And my understanding is that right now they're still in a fully software-rendered world.
Interesting. Let's switch gears here for a moment. So let's talk about XAML. XAML is cropping up all over the place, to yes. name a couple, you know, obviously Silverlight and WPF. Yeah. And maybe would you care to speak to where it's popping up and why?
Microsoft supports XAML, obviously, in, as you say, Silverlight and WPF. They also use it for Windows Workflow Foundation, the WPF, mm-hmm. the WF Foundation. And they're able to use that because in .NET, at least, XAML maps more or less directly onto objects. Doesn't have to. If you actually go and read the XAML specification, which Microsoft recently released a draft of as part of their whole open specification promise, it's actually a bit more open than that. It doesn't require the .NET to be under there. It says, well, we define these things called objects and properties, but we don't really say what those have to be. That's up to your implementation, whether you map those onto .NET objects, or in the case of Silverlight 1, they map them onto JavaScript objects, but you could map them onto anything you like. But in the .NET world, elements typically become objects, attributes typically become properties, which means it becomes a useful way of building trees of objects. So Workflow is able to use it, and also people are starting to talk about using it for configuration file formats as well. Because we have this config file thing that's been in .NET for a while, but it's a slightly awkward thing to work with. If you want to do custom sections of the file, people have written various frameworks to simplify saving and loading in a state, but people are now looking at XAML and going, well, we've already got this sort of object to XML serializer that works quite well, it's quite extensible. It has a forward compatibility story. They're using the same markup compatibility technology that the Office XML file formats use. That's actually the same core technology underneath there, which has a means of dealing with the problem of what happens as I move forward or backwards between versions. How do I deal with stuff that's been added but might not be recognized by older versions? All those problems are solved because they've got a solution to that. So it looks quite attractive as a file format. So I think now in particular that the XAML specs are out there, I think we may start to see people looking a little bit more broadly to configuration. I maybe even sending objects across the wire. That's something you could consider doing. Would it perhaps make sense to have a web service deliver stuff up to a Silverlight client as a XAML document? Maybe it wouldn't, but certainly it's technically doable. So it's a little early to say exactly where it's going to end up, but certainly I think you're seeing more thought in that space. So it's an interesting one to watch.
Now, to finish up, if you care to make a prediction, let's say we step forward a year and we're looking back. What do you think Silverlight adoption, or do you care to make a guess as to what Silverlight adoption will be roughly a year from now?
That's a very tricky one to answer. And of course, there's two different sides you can look at that from. There's the how many machines will have it installed.
Right.
Adoption. Which is more about, it's how widely available is the platform. And then there's the how many people are actually building apps on top of it. So take the first one, Microsoft are pushing really hard there. They've taken a lot of steps to try and encourage popular sites to use it. All their own sites are making use of it. And as they announced at Mix, they're doing the Olympics sites on top of Silverlight as well. So I think you're going to see fairly wide uptake as a result of that. I mean, they're talking about some remarkable download statistics, like in terms of 1 million a day, if not more, which is just astonishing numbers. I don't know how long that'll be kept up for, but certainly from that point of view, I think Silverlight's going to be widely available. What's harder to predict is at what point will that tail off? Will it tail off once they've got 99% of the internet, or once they've got 75%, or once they've got 50%? Sooner or later, it will tail off, and I honestly have no idea at which point that tailing off on the curve will occur. Having said that, I'm sure they have internal targets, and of course they are taking steps to encourage people. And certainly in London, where I work, I've come across a few projects where money and resources and help seem to be awfully forthcoming if only you would use Silverlight on your websites. And I suspect that will continue until Microsoft have got the kind of adoption they're looking for. So that half of the bargain, I think, is probably something that is relatively within Microsoft's ability to push. The harder one, I think, really is the adoption from the developer side of the house and the site builder side of the house. Mm-hmm. I think for Microsoft shops, it seems like a fairly straightforward choice. It means you don't have to bring in new skills to .NET shop to provide the client-side behaviors. You don't have to learn whole Ajax frameworks. You can just say, oh, it's all C# or all VB.NET. We can carry on doing the same things we were already doing. It just runs in the browser now. So if that's the world that a particular production shop is in, then I think that it'll be a natural transition. The thing that makes me a little bit more nervous about predicting it'll be a runaway success is a lot of the places I have worked with over the years have been more on the Adobe side of the house, shall we say. So heavy users of Flash, and the designers are all in that world. Flash, Illustrator, Fireworks, and Photoshop tend to dominate. And in particular, Macs also tend to be around quite a lot in these places. And I think for them, I think you'll see Silverlight be a much slower burn for that sort of shop. Partly because they are used to the Flash world, where the designer is at the center of the world. And yeah, the design environment they provide you with can do most things. And they find it a bit unnerving, in my experience, that you have to do code to get certain things done in the world of WPF.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so that can be viewed as sort of a downside from a designer perspective.
Exactly.
I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah, so developers, it's like, yeah, it's great. There's nothing weird and strange and funky going on that I can't control. It's all code. It's wonderful. Whereas the designer is pretty much the opposite. It's like, it's all funky and strange code stuff that I can't control. That's a real issue that I'm seeing with the people I'm working with. I think that will be something that I think, until Microsoft can resolve that with the design tooling, until Expression evolves to the point where the designers feel empowered by the toolkit rather than slightly scared by it, I think you will see slower adoption. And that, to me, does not look like a problem that's going to be solved in the next year. So given that, I would say that heavily design-led places will probably be slower on the uptake. So a year from now, I would expect relatively few of those to be leaping joyfully towards Silverlight. I think you'll see the initial uptake in the more development-led, the more technically led places.
Right.
I think a year from now it'll still be not as big as Flash, for example, on websites. I don't think it'll be snapping at the heels there quite in that time scale. But clearly, Microsoft are determined on this one, and I'm sure they already know that that's an issue. They'll be listening to their customers and getting that feedback quite strongly, I would imagine. People like to give Microsoft feedback strongly, so I'm sure they're aware of this and will be pushing against it. But to my way of thinking, I think that side of the equation is going to be more like a 2 or 3 year project at the minimum before the design led places feel more comfortable with it.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Silverlight's dependence on code could be a problem for designers? I can see that. Although with Blend and the other design tools, I can see designers not having to touch code at all for simple things. But Ian makes a good point. Thanks for listening to the Sparkling Client podcast. Eric and I work for Silver Bay Labs, the company Eric founded. If you want to know more about what we do, see www.silverbaylabs.org. The music for today's show is used with permission and is from teamyacht.com and magnatune.com. For more information, see the show notes page.